On this episode, Jay Taft and I talk college football playoff sleepers and conference realignment. Then, in the inaugural edition of our Idiot of the Week segment, Todd Grantham and AP poll voters come under fire. And in Facts or Fake News, we discuss whether or not Josh Allen has surpassed Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback in the NFL. All this and more coming up on Stone Cold Sports Talk. Stone Cold Sports Talk, episode 41, the lawnmower episode, because they decided they were just going to start cutting grass about 5 minutes before Jay Taft and I decided we'd start recording this. College football, NFL, all on the docket for today. We will begin with college football playoff long shots. We are now, Jay, I believe it's 2 weeks away from the first rankings on November 2nd, a little bit inside that.
I believe that is correct, Luke.
A little bit inside 2 weeks until the first college football playoff rankings drop, and we see Georgia as the undisputed number one after they, in all likelihood, will run all over the University of Florida in Jacksonville in 2 weeks' time. But it's a weird year for the playoff. Alabama already has one loss. The Big Ten has already had its normal titan, Ohio State, fall to Oregon in non-conference play. And as usual, the Pac-12 seems to be on the outside looking in, Cincinnati getting a shot. So a lot of dark horse playoff teams in contention, and with all the parity there has been this year, there are several who stand out as legitimate contenders to sneak in and get the fourth seed through the back door. Jay and Taft both agreed vehemently, if it's possible to vehemently agree on anything, on the team they thought was most likely to sneak into the playoff. And tell us a little bit more about the Penn State Nittany Lions.
Yeah, well, I think that talking about who could make the college football playoff other than like the main five that you have written down, which are Georgia, Alabama, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and Ohio State, I think that's a very valid argument that we need to bring up, because I think the only two teams that are in a safe spot right now to make the playoff are Georgia and Cincinnati, just based on their remaining schedule of Alabama having to play in the SEC championship, Oklahoma having to continue to play in the Big 12, even though I don't even think they're that good, and then Ohio State having to went out and proved themselves as a good team, even though they lost to Oregon earlier in the season. And I think the best team on the outside of those five are the Penn State Nittany Lions. And I just think it's because if there's going to be a team that makes it outside of Georgia, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and Ohio State, it's going to be a Big Ten team that replaces Ohio State. And that pretty much leaves you with the three other contenders in the Big East, which are Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State. I don't think Michigan and Michigan State are as good as people think they are, or at least good enough to make the playoff. So I think that leaves Penn State, who is a team that before they lost to Iowa, people were saying we're going to make the playoff. I mean, if you think about it, they lost their quarterback, Sean Clifford, one of the best guys on the field, probably the best guy, or the most important guy on offense. They lost him midway through that game. Now they're coming off a bye. They're going to get Sean Clifford back soon enough, and their schedule gives them a chance to make the playoff. They're going to have to beat Ohio State and Michigan State on the road and then beat Michigan at home. And then they'd go on to the Big East. They'd win the Big Ten East that way, and they'd have to play Iowa in the Big Ten Championship. And I think that they can get revenge over the Hawkeyes. So I think Penn State has a favorable schedule to make the playoff if they can win out. And I do think that they're a good enough team to do that, Jay. Are you going to back me up? Do you think Penn State is good enough to get through those teams?
Yeah, they are. This is kind of the exact opposite end of the spectrum of what Luke is going to talk about in a minute. But Penn State's schedule, it's ideal because you get so many chances to get a ranked win and to solidify your spot in the Final Four. Like, our main argument against Cincinnati right now is that they're not going to beat anybody significant the rest of the way. OU is going to get Oklahoma State down the road and maybe Texas again, but like there's one, if Oklahoma State keeps winning, they'll be a top eight team like they are right now. That'll be a good win. But Penn State gets Ohio State guaranteed. They're a top 10 team. Michigan State guaranteed. They're a top 10 team. Michigan again, guaranteed. That's a top 10 team. So three left on the regular season schedule. If they win those games, I don't see Iowa losing the West. So that'll be another ranked team in Iowa to make the playoff. And it all comes down to they have a big three on offense with Clifford, as you talked about, a quarterback. When he got hurt against Iowa, Jaquan Roberson Jaquari Roberson just he looked lost. He looked like a standard backup quarterback who'd never played before. Noah Kane is a really good downhill running back. He's fast. He's not super big, but he will get physical, and he's extremely quick. And then just Jahan Dotson is ridiculous at receiver. I think he's the best in the country. So they've got a big three on offense, a big three of potential victories in at Ohio State versus Michigan, and then at Michigan State. And if they get there, a win versus Iowa, and they can very easily sneak in the back door of the playoff.
I agree with you all. I think it's important to note, first of all, that for the long shot segment, we excluded Georgia, Bama, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and Ohio State from contention because all five of those obviously have a legitimate chance with where they stand right now. Staying in the state of Pennsylvania, but heading a little bit further west, I believe that the Pittsburgh Panthers have a legitimate dark horse claim to being a college football playoff team representing the ACC. They would hypothetically be, assuming they went out, a 12-1 Power 5 conference champion. Their one loss would be to Western Michigan, which, yes, very bad loss, but Western Michigan is going to probably be 8-4, 9-3, so not a totally catastrophic non-conference group of five loss, at least relative to other ones. The case I'm making is kind of the opposite of the one that Jay and Taft is making or are making. I believe that instead of an opportunity to build on their resume, I think that Pitt has a chance to be the last team standing of sorts in a year of tremendous parity. We've never had a two-loss playoff team, and I don't believe we will have one this year unless something really, really crazy happens here down the stretch. And because of that, I think that a lot of what might happen in the Big Ten for these next couple weeks is just juggernauts knocking out juggernauts, and then they all end the season 10-2 or 11-2 after one of them inevitably wins the Big Ten championship. So I think the Big Ten has the opposite problem that they might have had in the past, where instead of having a team that might not have enough quality wins as a one-loss team, they have so much power at the top of their conference that a two-loss conference champion probably isn't going to have the resume just because the committee is so clearly uncomfortable with a two-loss team being in the playoff.
What comes with the Big Ten's elite teams, and they're all going to play each other, is they're all going to kill each other. Like, somebody is going to lose three games, or everybody's going to lose two games. Like, you could very easily have each of these teams with two losses and just everybody eliminated because of that.
So that's what happens every year in the Big Ten. The top teams always knock each other out, and this year especially you have four teams that were at some point in the season top 10, if they're not top 10 right now, and are still contenders to make a playoff. And Stern, you definitely have a good argument that they could just end up all beating each other. And I wouldn't be surprised if Penn State drops one of its four remaining games against Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, and then presumably Iowa, if they can play them again in the Big Ten championship. And that kind of opens the door for a team that you don't really think about, like you mentioned Pitt, or a team maybe in the Big 12, Oklahoma State, Oregon in the Pac-12, if they can win out. I think that the door to the college football playoff is as open as it has ever been this year.
Now, the interesting thing with Pitt and their remaining schedule is that they have no teams that are currently ranked left on their docket. Their remaining schedule is 39th, according to ESPN's FPI. But they are still teams that still somewhat pop on a resume because of some name brand bias. Now, are Miami or North Carolina better than the average American team that Cincinnati is going to run roughshod over the remainder of the season? Absolutely not.
No.
The thing is, the committee is made up of humans who are obviously predisposed towards certain biases, and wins against Clemson, Miami, and North Carolina down the stretch are going to look a lot better than Cincinnati's wins against a UCF or a USF or something else. And they shouldn't. I don't believe they should, because there are teams in the American that are better than teams in the ACC. But facts are facts, and the committee respects the Power Five name.
The USF is really bad. USF is really bad. That's a bad example. But UCF, when they get Dylan Gabriel back, which I believe is going to happen soon, I don't think he's out for the season. You got to remember, SMU is in the American. Cincinnati gets SMU down the road. They are, I think, 21 this week. Carolina does. Oh my God, that's it's disrespectful, but it's appropriately disrespectful.
I know USF is terrible, but USF could probably still hang with Miami because Miami's really bad. But the win against Miami is going to look better.
Well, so you forgot to mention Clemson. Pitt will get the chance to beat Clemson this week, and that's going to be a huge win on their resume if they can get it. Even though Clemson's not that good, and they're not as good as Vegas thinks they are. I don't know why they're only 3-point dogs playing in Pittsburgh this weekend. That's a conversation for another time.
Is that a quick lock this weekend?
It is. Pittsburgh -3. Lock it down. But what I was saying is Pittsburgh's resume, if they can win out and beat a top 20 NC State or Wake, whoever
wins. I was going to say the ACC championship is probably going to be a top 20 team.
It will be. And
it's going to be a ranked matchup, which is not.
Pittsburgh's resume, if they can win out, is going to be the exact same as Clemson's resume that they've had the past 7 years making the playoff. There will be no difference.
They lost to Western Michigan. That's the one thing.
Yes.
That Western Michigan loss is inexplicable.
But I think in a year like this, that loss is going to be more easily explained away because they're not going to be six undefeated teams or four undefeated teams or five undefeated teams that are at least playoff caliber left. Obviously, Coastal lost last night, so that's one more off the list of ranked teams. Obviously, Coastal would never make the playoff, but the point stands. And, of course, the big thing with Pitt is you have to have, to make the college football playoff typically, especially as the outside-looking-in sort of player, you have to have the one who's tearing it up. And Kenny Pickett at quarterback, again, I'm bummed Williams not here to be able to continue to pile on to how great Kenny Pickett's been. 11th in passing yards, 8th in completion percentage, 8th in yards per attempt, 9.4 yards per attempt, which is pretty remarkable, especially given that they have been much more biased toward the pass than the run this year. Their leading rusher has something like 350 yards, and we're 7 games into the season. 4th in passing touchdowns and 3rd in passer rating nationally. Kenny Pickett has been unbelievable. I think by the end of the year he should be in the top 10 of Heisman voting at the very least. I mean, he's been terrific this year, and certainly his numbers justify that. So Pitt, I think, has a chance to be a very, very sleeper, very dark horse playoff contender. But just with the way things are going this year and the way these top teams continue to beat the crap out of each other in the Big Ten, I think there's a chance that the committee has to look at it and say, well, we have a 2-loss or a 3-loss Ohio State. Not that Ohio State will have 3 losses, or a 2-loss Ohio State, a 2-loss Michigan, a 2-loss Michigan State, or a 2-loss Penn State, or we have this 1-loss ACC team that just beat a top 20 team in their final game of the season. And I think that as a result, there's a good chance for that. Also worth noting that because Ohio State has a non-conference loss, there's a chance that they could potentially be a 3-loss conference champion, maybe just because of how the Big Ten's end of the schedule was working out. If they drop 2 more games, but still win their division, which I don't know if that's, I feel like that's probably possible. I haven't looked into it that much, but there's a chance they sneak in to the Big Ten championship.
We're going to find out a ton in a week and a half's time. So next week when, Michigan State plays Ohio State and Penn State plays Michigan. I think that's what it is. We're going to find out a lot really, really quickly.
Yeah, the Big Ten's definitely still needs to sort itself out. And we saw that last weekend as the number 2 Iowa Hawkeyes lost to Purdue. I'm going to save that rant for later. But Stone, to add to your Pitt argument, or to add another team that could be thrown in the mix if the Big Ten does beat each other up, I think a 1-loss team that could get in is Ole Miss. We can't count them out. Obviously, they lost to Bama earlier in the year. That was a road loss when Bama was number 1. But if Ole Miss can win out, and that would be a top 25 win over Auburn, top 25 win over Texas A&M. And if they end the season, what would that be, 11-1? Even though they won't get the chance to play in the SEC championship, most likely, assuming Alabama wins out, I think Ole Miss will definitely still be in that conversation because the same argument you used for Pitt, they're a 1-loss team that has top 25 wins, and they have that one player that will stick out, and that's Matt Corral, who at the end of the regular season could be at the top of the Heisman ballot.
I agree with you. And Jay, I saw your reaction there, but I think it's certainly possible just because, let's not pretend it's not impossible for Ole Miss to make the SEC championship. If Alabama loses to Auburn, then Ole Miss is in the SEC championship. Yeah, it's that easy.
Exactly.
It's that easy.
See, I'm all for fun and games, but there's no way Bama loses to Auburn. Let's be real. Like Bo Nix is not beating Alabama. I'm sorry.
Okay, would you have said that in 2019?
That there was no shot because Mac Jones was fresh off the pine.
Okay.
This year is reminding me a lot of 2017 when Georgia had one of its best teams of the 21st century, and they ended up they won the SEC East, and they ended up playing Auburn in the SEC championship because that Auburn beat Alabama. And it opened the door for Georgia to play a team that wasn't Alabama, which kind of helped them make their run. And as you know, win the Rose Bowl.
You were halftime national champions. Georgia was halftime national champions.
You know how the rest of that year goes. But my point is, no one expected Auburn to not make the SEC championship that year, but they didn't. And it allowed for Georgia to play Auburn in the SEC championship, which in this case, it would allow for.
I have to correct one of my fact mistakes from earlier. Next week, Michigan plays at Michigan State and Penn State plays at Ohio State. I had it.
That's a pretty awesome weekend right before Halloween.
And Georgia, Florida. Don't forget.
Okay.
Jacksonville.
Save your freaking time. Do not watch Georgia, Florida. It'll probably be the last game Dan Mullen coaches.
Honestly,
Florida. But we're gonna hold off on that.
I hope not. I hope that Dan Mullen stays. But I will say I will most likely be at the game in Jacksonville, and there's a high chance that after midway through the first quarter, I am on my phone watching one of those two Big Ten games.
Well, yeah, you should be, because the only thing worth watching in that stadium that day is going to be Jordan Davis eating Damian Pierce and Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson alive.
You're paying for a ticket to the pool is basically what you're doing. There's no sense watching the football game.
Yeah, exactly.
By far.
Maybe Urban Meyer will come out and do some halftime entertainment, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, God.
This has by far been my favorite
I'm just going to say he was going to dance. Urban Meyer just going to dance around a little bit because he's happy he won one game. That was what I was saying.
I'll look out for him in the bars in Jacksonville.
You can't get any bars. All right. We're going to talk. I do want to bring this up for debate real quick because of the way the Big Ten is going. The Big Ten East has Michigan State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. The Big Ten West has Iowa followed by Minnesota and Purdue. Do you think there's an argument to be made for the Big Ten to abolish the divisions for making the conference championship game just because it opens the door for probably two-loss Iowa by the time they limp in to potentially knock off a one-loss significantly better Big Ten East team, just because the balance of power in the Big Ten is so obviously tilted toward the East. And it has been for ever since they abolished Leaders and Legends and made it East and West.
See, that's the problem, is that multiple people signed off on what's currently there when you have historical powers. Like Michigan and Ohio State need to be in the same division so they play each other every year. Let's be real. Michigan State needs to be there too. But what's Penn State's biggest rival? Like, who do they play last week? They play Michigan State, like in a meaningless rivalry game at the end of the year.
I feel like Penn State's biggest game of the year is always Ohio State. Just feels that way.
And I feel like Wisconsin is abnormally bad. They're normally pretty good. So they bring up the West. Iowa's always decent.
And Minnesota was a relevant team in the past, like, 5 or so years. This year they've kind of stunk it up. But before,
I mean, yes, but over the scope of the last 30 years of college football.
Nebraska's
Big Ten West, you have Nebraska and Wisconsin. Iowa hasn't been, in the grand scheme of things, for an extended 30, 40 year period, they haven't been that good. Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Michigan State. I mean, those are like storied. Every one of those teams has a storied coach who was there forever. Penn State had Joe Paterno. Michigan had Schembechler, right? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ohio State had Tressel, and then obviously before that, I don't know why I'm blanking on the other guy's name. And then Michigan State had D'Antonio for ages. But those are all teams that have been around and relevant for a very long time. Michigan State had Saban too.
I'm going to translate this into a Carolina perspective. Our two biggest rivals are State and Duke. And they're not, all three of us are not in the same coastal division. As State is in the Atlantic, but we still play them every year. I feel like they could do something similar and move either Penn State or Michigan State over to the West and bring somebody back over to the East that's weaker and still have Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State play each other. They just won't be in the same division.
And I think it's also possible that change happens organically, because with the SEC expanding to 16, there's a lot of talk of dividing into four pods, basically. And you play so Florida would be guaranteed to play Georgia, LSU, and then one other team you throw in there every year, because those teams typically play each other.
They wouldn't split Bama and Auburn.
Yeah. But you basically protect the rivalries that are important to the conference, but then at the same time make it so that the top two teams are always playing each other in the conference championship, just because it's not like kind of like the Georgia Auburn game in 2017. It's not fair that if Auburn wins that game, the SEC gets partially shut out of the playoff because a two-loss team that was definitively worse than the team they beat in Bama ends up making it, just because of the way the divisions and conference records all sort out. Topic.
Yeah, There's a lot of problems with the conferences right now. I don't think the Big Ten East and West is the biggest problem that the NCAA has to face right now. I'm actually in favor of the Big Ten, how it's split up. I mean, those teams outside of your Ohio State and Michigan, I mean, honestly, just Ohio State, every other top Big Ten team kind of has their highs and their lows. I mean, you look at Michigan State 2 years ago, they sucked, and now they're the top 10 in the Big Ten East.
They have a new coach for the second year in his contract because they fired D'Antoni because he was so bad.
Yeah, and you look at a team like Wisconsin, like they're good at times. Iowa, Minnesota, you can even go to like Nebraska, or look at even Northwestern last year who played in the Big Ten Championship. I think that it just fluctuates from year to year, and right now it's easy to say, yeah, the Big Ten East is way better than the West, so you do need to split it up. But I think in 3 years from now, when that change would end up happening, because you can't just snap your fingers and make it happen, I think 3 years from now it might be perfectly fine and not need change.
It's like the ACC, Clemson and Florida State have dominated for a decade, and this year they're both really bad. But like people were like, oh, split them up so they play each other every year. They do play each other every year in their own division. And they were the two best teams, and somebody had to win. So they already determined that winner. And if they
I do like what you were saying, Stone, where it's like the top two teams in the conference should play each other every year. So maybe that's an argument to break away from divisions. But I do like how teams play the same teams each year, like your NC State, Duke, and UNC. Like Jay said, like they should play every year because they're in-state rivals. And I think
I did notice the State does not play Duke this year, which is very strange to me.
Yeah, not in basketball for some reason. I mean, not in football, but they do in basketball.
Yeah.
I don't know. Conferences are weird, and in 2025, it won't even matter. So why are we even talking?
It won't even matter when college football gets shut down in 5 years anyway. So who do we care? All right, moving on to a new segment we're adding. I think this is the first time we've done this. I mostly just added it to be able to unload some thoughts I have.
Caution everybody about what you're about to do, because it's about to go nuclear. I controlled myself last week, but this could go a whole different level.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome you all to a new Stone Cold Sports Talk segment called Idiot of the Week.
Uncle John, this is for you, brother. I hope he's listening. If he's not listening, send him whatever minute this is and just tell him to start listening.
Oh, I will. So the Idiot of the Week was a pretty no-brainer nominee for me. It is Florida defensive coordinator Todd Grantham, who, despite consistently putting together one of the sorriest units in the history of the University of Florida's proud football program, still has a job. And after giving up 49 points, 454 total yards, 321 yards rushing, including 7.1 yards per carry, is still employed because Dan Mullen doesn't have what it takes to make the hard decisions because he's not a true strong leader. Ty Davis Price, LSU running back. So you know the team that fired their coach in the middle of last week, but didn't tell anyone about it until Sunday? The one who was going to fire a guy who won a national championship because their program has been so bad and so awful, and their passing game, which still only put up 133 yards against Florida, mind you, was so atrocious they had to just get rid of him, LSU and Ed Orgeron. Well, their running back, Ty Davis Price, set a school record for rushing yards last week and carried the ball 36 times for 287 and 3 touchdowns. It was also a school record for Florida, who under Todd Grantham allowed the most yards ever, even back in the days when they ran the freaking wishbone every play and there was a guy getting handed the ball 45 times, getting CTE by the end of the third quarter before they had to wheel him out. He ran for 287 yards, and this University of Florida allowed the most yards it has ever allowed by a single player. They're a 31st in scoring defense this season, even with cupcakes Florida Atlantic and USF. Outside of those games, they have allowed 31.2 points per game in conference play. They are 29th in yards per play allowed, and who knows how much worse that number is when you exclude the cupcakes. And they are 57th in rushing yards per attempt allowed. Todd Grantham, congratulations on pulling off probably the greatest con since John Spano bought the New York Islanders without actually having more than like $1 million to his name. Maybe the greatest con since Bernie Madoff and remaining employed by the University of Florida into your fourth year. And more than anything, congratulations on whatever awful blackmail it is that you have over Dan Mullen that he can't fire you for being the sorriest defensive coordinator in the entire SEC East. And that is including Vanderbilt, because they don't have the recruits that you do. pitiful, horrible, terrible defensive coordinator, shouldn't be employed. I wish he had gone to the Cincinnati Bengals 2 years ago. I'll hop off of my soapbox for idiot of the week. Jay, what was my time there?
Right at 2.5 minutes. I started 10 seconds late and you finished at 2:20. That was excellent.
I need to catch my breath.
I love it. Let me continue the segment and just second quite literally every verb, every word that just came out of your mouth, because it's downright pathetic. I listen to the ESPN College Football podcast pretty much every day. And what was this? Right after they lost to Kentucky, David Pollack, one of your Georgia boys, Taft, was like, everybody in Florida knows what third and Grantham means and nobody else does. And it's downright pathetic how bad they are on third down. And if you can see Stone right now, the pain is just, it's rough. So it's a problem. I don't understand why what's his resume like? He's coached in the league before. He's not.
He's coordinator for the freaking Bengals. Like, ooh, what does that mean? It's like hiring the Jags. It's like hiring a Jags offensive staffer. Like, you're gaining nothing.
So are you saying he's the Doug Marrone of Nick Saban's offensive line staff right now? He's just like useless former NFL coach.
Yeah. I mean, it'd kind of be like if we hired Adam Gase as an offensive coordinator, which, you know what, at this point with how freaking awfully Emery's playing, that's on the table. I'll do anything. I don't care. Let's hire some combination of Hugh Jackson, Adam Gase, and who was the Lions coach in 08 when they went 0-16? Because I think whatever it is, it'll work better than whatever moments we're cooking up every week.
You'll get Freddie Kitchen. I'll second everything Stone said. My idiot of the week. Taft, you're about to get it at it in a couple minutes, I think. Or maybe right now. Spencer Petras last week, quarterback at Iowa, was against Purdue, mind you, who was 3-2. Was 17 of 32 for 195 yards and 4 touchdowns. He had a QBR of 16. You get a QBR of 38.4 if you spike the ball into the ground on every play. He was less than half of that QBR for spiking the ball. That's downright pathetic. They lost because Iowa makes its money by winning the turnover margin. This year they have a damn good punter and playing really good defense, and you can't play really good defense when you're having to face 4 extra possessions from your sorry ass quarterback. You can't throw the ball, as a man would do so all season. And when the run gets stopped and you turn the ball over, you're going to get embarrassed at home by an unranked team like they did last week.
Complimentary football, baby.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a similar note to what Jay said and stay with the Iowa Hawkeyes. But I'm not even going to call them the idiots. I'm going to call the people that make the AP polls the idiots. They had no mess putting Iowa at number 2. I mean, if you look at their resume up to that point, like Jay said, they have a good defense. Their offense is not good enough to be anywhere inside the top 5 even. And they didn't even really have that impressive of wins. They had 2 top 25 wins at the time to start the season. Yeah, that was against Indiana, who is like 2-5, and Iowa State, who has 2 losses, I don't even know how many losses Iowa State has, but they are not a number 9 team, which is what they were when Iowa beat them. Iowa being number 2 was just a joke, and that was proved last weekend when they lost to Purdue. A 3-2 Purdue, mind you, at home, 24-7. What the hell is Iowa doing at the number 2 team in the nation? I don't know, but I'm glad that it's gone, and I'm glad that they're not even going to sniff the top 5 again, because that offense particularly has no mess being that highly ranked.
Let me get after that. As a Carolina fan, the AP poll has seriously overrated some teams this year. Let's just see the problem.
It makes no sense.
The problem I have, there's a bunch of problems I have with the AP poll. You ask anybody who goes here who asks me who should be good and who should be ranked and who should not be ranked. The AP poll drives me crazy, because until a week and a half from now when they release the first college football playoff, everybody just worships the AP poll. It's the final straw, everything. And let's go take a look at it right now. Let me pull this up.
While you're pulling that up, Jay, I'll just tell you how much the AP poll makes no sense at all. This week, there are 2 top 10 teams who are underdogs to unranked teams.
Exactly.
Explain that to me. Explain to me.
Hang on, who? That's
Number eight, Oklahoma State are 7-point underdogs to unranked Iowa State. 7 points. And
they're getting a whole touchdown.
A whole touchdown. And then you go over to College Game Day, which is number 10 Oregon, who's playing an unranked UCLA, and they're 3-point underdogs. That's not how the AP people should work. Explain that to me.
No.
I would also add on, where is A&M ranked right now? And I know they've had some bad losses, but how is the team that beat Bama not higher than 17th?
See, what I don't understand, I saw this week, is a very valid point. Iowa lost to an unranked team, and they fall from 2 to 11. Bama loses to an unranked team. They fall from 1 to 5 and are now back to 4. I don't really understand that logic, to be entirely honest with you. But yeah, I guess it's people like us in the media who vote for the AP poll. Like people, I don't know if people fully recognize that it's media people. It's AP, obviously. And I think the AP poll is just like the top five right now. Georgia, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, Bama, Ohio State. OU has not looked good until 2 weeks ago. They should not have been in the top 10 up until Caleb Williams took the snaps. Ohio State, yeah, really rough start, but they're just somehow magically in the top five over Oregon, who beat them. Like, I'm one of those people who believes that until you lose, you stay highly ranked.
So you mean AP is in the Associated Press and not like the College Board? Is that the College Board putting out these rankings? Because they are so evil and twisted sometimes, AP rankings are, that it would make sense that a monopoly like the College Board, that just aims to ruin children's lives, would be the ones behind all of our college football ranking misery too.
No, I think it's the same people.
Okay, yeah, I agree. I mean, has anyone ever seen the Associated Press take the AP poll? No, and up until I have official contract. I mean, because also the College Board would be the kind of people to masquerade it as, oh, it's the Associated Press, that AP. But, you know,
they call this a busy time in the College Board industry, because they have to both grade SAT and ACTs and also try and rank the top 25 college football teams, which they obviously don't do that well.
Yeah. All right. So in a similar vein to the last segment, we're just going to start calling this the soapbox. I mean, Jay wanted to go on Carolina. Lord knows this week I want to pile all over Dan Mullen. So, Jay, you lead us off this week. You have 90 seconds for a topic of your choosing in the world of sport.
So we're going to get after the same subject here. I'm just going to preamble what you're going to say. Everybody knows last week that Coach O, he did not get fired on the spot. He just got relieved of his duties starting at the end of the season. So he got fired. Starting at the end of the season is pretty much what's going on, and he midweek, so that causes crisis right in the middle of game prep against Florida. LSU players are like, what am I going to do next year, because Coach O is not going to be here, and Florida rolls into Baton Rouge and it's a team that could not like tie its shoes correctly in LSU the past couple weeks. They have looked awful. They got beat by 3 touchdowns against Kentucky. Allows Florida and Dan Mullen to roll in there and just Florida just doesn't show up. It's rough. I mean, the offense, I mean, 42 points, Stone, let's be real, 42 points from Dan Mullen's offense is not terrible, especially in Baton Rouge with an 11 a.m. local time kickoff. That's rough. 42 points is not bad, but Grantham's got to go. It's so bad. I hear rants about it from you. I hear it from David Pollock. I hear them from my own just information. Like, it is bad, dude. And Grantham needs to go. Stone, go ahead. I'm sure you're going to take this in God knows however many directions, but I can't wait to hear it.
I'm going to hold myself to the 90 seconds. I'm really going to hold myself to the 90 seconds, I promise. Starting now. I never thought I'd be saying this at the end of 2019, when Florida seemed to be further approaching the mountaintop, when Dan Mullen had just knocked off Virginia in the Orange Bowl to advance to 11-2 with a great quarterback in Kyle Trask with a year development left, with an ultimate unicorn of a tight end in Kyle Pitts and a terrific playmaker in Kadarius Toney. I assumed he could continue to recruit people like that. How wrong I was. I think it is very much beyond time to have the hashtag fire Mullen conversation. In his time at Florida, he is 6-7, so sub .500 in games decided by 8 points or fewer. He is 6-7 against top 25 opponents and against LSU, Bama, Georgia, and A&M, the people that you need to beat if you want to be the class of the SEC. He is a combined 2-8. He embarrasses himself continuously during press conferences, like when he whined about losing to Texas A&M for having too many fans basically during COVID, and then the next week asked for a full stadium, and then defended Marco Wilson for throwing the shoe. He runs a program that has no accountability. And on top of that, we were promised that he would be a quarterback whisperer who developed people like Tim Tebow and Dak Prescott. Since he got to UF, here's his quarterback track record. He started Felipe over Trask. He started Emory Jones over Anthony Richardson up to this point in the season. And he doesn't seem to be a particularly good quarterback recruiter, developer, or even at some point a play caller. So what is Dan Mullen good at? The answer, I think, is almost nothing. And Jimbo Fisher, who arrived at Texas A&M at the same time that Dan Mullen showed up at Florida, last year you would have said convincingly that Florida was in the better position. And now I think it is so beyond obvious that Texas A&M has a significantly brighter future in College Station than the Gators do in Gainesville. It is panic mode. They could be 4-4. I know I'm going over time. They could be 4-4. If they lose to Georgia next week, which is not at all where anyone thought this team would be after the way they played the last two seasons. Pathetic stuff.
Bravo, Stone. I accept the humility of the horrors of being a Florida fan this year, especially under Todd Grantham. And I think we have covered that in this podcast. I'm going to go with my 30-second rant. There's not much wrong in Athens, Georgia right now, and there's not much to complain about, but I'm going to bring up what was brutal for Dog fans this past Saturday in their 30-13 win over Kentucky, and that is the bad beat of the week. Kentucky was driving. They put together like a 7-minute drive with no time on the clock, and the score was 30-7. The spread was 21.5, so Georgia is covering by 2 points. And Kentucky, after the longest drive ever, which showed that Mark Stoops was in no rush on that drive and kind of just wanted to keep Georgia off the field and just call it a day, they got stuffed at the goal line on 2 consecutive plays. So the clock is running. It's now 3rd and goal. There's like 10 seconds left. He gets it all the way down to 4 seconds. Mark Stoops decides to call a timeout. At this point, Sanford Stadium is erupting with boos because I know that 75% of the Dog fans had Georgia covering the 21.5. Mark Stoops decides to be the enemy of Athens, Georgia, and he runs one more play after calling a timeout, and they throw a little screen, a bubble screen pass to score a touchdown and cover with a 21.5 point spread. So Georgia did not cover, and that made for a lot of unhappy Georgia fans, especially a lot of my friends that go to school here. And to top it all off, the under would have hit, but because of that touchdown, an extra point would have hit the over, but Georgia ended up blocking that, so the over didn't hit. It was just a series of bad beats, and having some Georgia bettors horrifically down bad. That is my rant. Like I said, not much to complain about, but Dogs cover, but not when you call a timeout with a 4-second running clock when you're down by.
Tough. What was the spread of that game?
21.5.
Stone, we're up here in Chapel Hill in Charlottesville, 3-3 or 4-3, and we've got 7-0 people complaining about winning a game by 20 points instead of 21 points.
Wait, who's 3-3 and 4-3? As the last time I checked, the UVA was 5-2 and about to advance to 6-2 after their win against Georgia Tech and possibly get into the top 25 after winning against BYU the following week. The University of Virginia is thriving in football right now. We're going to be ranked after we beat BYU. Guarantee it. Wholeheartedly guarantee it.
Who do you play?
Georgia Tech and then BYU. And then we'll be 7-2 with a win against a top 25 team.
Who?
We're already – BYU will be in the top 25.
Not ranked.
They'll be back.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah, we're up here making delusional claims about a team that should have been in the AP top 10 like we were and then apparently should be in the top 25 in 2 weeks from now. And Taft is complaining about losing a game or winning a game by 20 points instead of 21.
Hey, 17. 17, not 20. Right?
Yeah. It was 30-13, but the touchdown is what covered the spread. So apparently Mark Stoops put a lot of money on Kentucky covering 21.5 and the over, and that's why he decided to act like it was a goal line it was like it was 10 seconds left in the tie ball game, or at least they needed a touchdown.
Keep him out of the old adage. Keep him out of the end zone. If you want to keep your bet going, keep him out of the end zone.
Yeah, well, Kirby probably live bet Kentucky second half. So if I had to guess, be my assumption. All right, facts or fake news time.
What were Florida LSU fans live betting at halftime?
I actually know an LSU fan who decided that he didn't live bet LSU until they were minus 210. Like, he waited until they were minus 210 and then still nabbed it and then obviously still won on his money line bet. I know another guy who, when they were I know someone else who right at kickoff got him at like plus 175 because I think Florida scored first, maybe. Anyway, well, I digress. Facts or fake news time.
One more thought. LSU, to add to how bad of a loss that was for Florida, was plus 420 at the start of the game.
Yeah. All right. Facts or fake news. Number one, Caleb Williams finishes as a Heisman finalist. I'll shut this down now. Fake news. You can't play half a season to be a Heisman finalist, period.
Yeah.
I think it's facts simply because there's like nobody in the country who actually like seemingly wants to win the Heisman. Like early on, it was Matt Corral. If Bijan Robinson, if Texas had beaten OU, he would be the front runner. It wouldn't be even close. But his team is bad. Bryce Young looked really bad against A&M. Matt Corral has looked really bad against Bama. So there's a back door to get a five finalist year like we had in, what was that, 2012 when Manziel won. I think he could sneak in as one of those five. Simply because he's been so good so recently, and it's recency bias. We talk about every year with the Heisman. Like, whoever finishes the season the best likely wins it. And Caleb Williams is on track to finish like far and away better than anybody else.
Speaking of people who we thought might have been Heisman finalists, this one involves the person whose job Caleb Williams took. Spencer Rattler does not enter the NFL draft. I say facts. I think he's got to wait another year, or else he's going to be a third or fourth round pick.
Yeah, well, he's gonna either enter the draft or transfer. He just got booed out of Oklahoma. He won't stay there, but I think it's more likely that he transfers somewhere else and tries to pull like a Jalen Hurts and succeed somewhere else and then go to the draft.
I was talking with my roommate about this yesterday. I think it's facts he does not enter the draft. Sam Howell's going to leave here, and I hate the dude, but it would make – he, from what I know about him and what he does well, he's a perfect fit for the system that we run here in Chapel Hill. I don't think he would actually do it. I don't want him here. But I would not be surprised if Mac reached out to him and gave an offer simply because he fits exact. Like, he and Sam Howell are pretty much the exact same dude. They are pocket players who can make plays but don't really excel at running the ball, but they can throw it really well anywhere. And I feel like he would be a good fit for what we do here. I don't want him here. He's a horrible person, but I would not be surprised if he ended up here next year.
I wouldn't either. I think Sam Howell definitely will consider staying because he doesn't want to go out on a bad note. I'm sure that him and Mac Brown have a good relationship. And that's just – if we look at the beginning of the season and I were to tell you that Sam Howell, Spencer Rattler, and I'm going to throw in JT Daniels in there too because I don't think he's going to go to the NFL draft after playing, what, one game he played against Clemson. He hasn't played since, and I don't know if he's going to get back in. I think Stetson could finish out the season. If I were to tell you that those three quarterbacks weren't going to enter the NFL draft, you guys would have called me crazy because those were three of the top quarterback prospects at the beginning of the season, and now I think it's looking likely, or at least possible, that all three come back for another year.
I agree.
I think that brings us to fact fake news number four. I think we should skip ahead a little bit.
I think we should too. JT Daniels should start over the mailman when he returns. Facts, because I think JT Daniels has a better chance of just demolishing Florida's defense. So I actually know. You know, you could throw Harley Shuford out at quarterback right now for Georgia, and Georgia
bash Harley Shuford.
I'm saying that you could throw Harley Shuford out there as a high school junior. And you know what? I think he probably still throws for five touchdowns on Todd Grantham's defense. Also a great young quarterback. I'm very excited to see play.
I think so. I mean, in Athens, it's actually become like a pretty hot topic on who should start, JT or Stetson. And they're starting to be some Stetson believers. just because he's done his job this year starting. And I'm kind of on that wave. JT Daniels, he needs to step up and play football if he's going to ever play, because it's his oblique right now. He was obviously fine to play against Clemson. He didn't throw over like 30 yards, but he was fine enough to start, and he hasn't really re-injured it. I mean, at least that people know about. And
I'm sure as heck hope he hasn't re-injured it. He hasn't done squat since late August.
Exactly. And he has warmed up every game. He's fully dressed out. He looks ready to go. And according to reports, he's been throwing over 40 yards in practice. I think JT Daniels could play if he had to. I think Stetson's just the right guy right now. And Kirby realizes that, and he doesn't want to rush JT back. So the fact that this Factor Fake News says JT Daniels should start over the mailman when he returns, I think that's fake news, because JT Daniels can return. He just hasn't for a particular reason, and that's the mailman.
Yeah, that's a mic drop moment there. Facts or fake news number Jay, you want to chime in on that? Or
oh no, I was saying I'm in the JT Daniels camp, because last year we saw what happened when JT Daniels came back and replaced Stetson Bennett, and it was just a completely different ball club in Georgia. I mean, this year Stetson Bennett is also playing better this year than he did last year, but I just think back all the time to that Georgia Bama game in the regular season last year, and Stetson Bennett just looked lost, dude, and JT Daniels came in and that the whole team transformed. So that's my reasoning.
Extra fake news number four, the Bills should have gone for it on fourth and inches. I'm on a half facts train here, because I think they should have gone for it, but I don't think running QB sneak is the right play there when you have an incredibly dynamic playmaker in Josh Allen. It's the Titans defense. You should be able to move the ball a half a yard anyway, but I feel like lining him up in shotgun isn't the way. I hate when you line up in shotgun and you don't have a quarterback who can actually make something happen. But Josh Allen is what, at the very worst, a top three quarterback in football right now. I mean, just like for the people who are down on him.
No. He is the best quarterback in football right now, in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think to limit him and say, all right, you're going to run a quarterback sneak here instead of, I mean, there are a lot of pretty good playmakers and pretty good receivers in Buffalo. Stephon Diggs, Emmanuel Sanders, hell, even Dawson Knox at times. Why not line up in shotgun? Roll, they're on the left hash, roll something out to your right, either run a little quick out route or flat route to someone who's just beyond the sticks. Or, you know, Josh Allen's a scrappy guy. He will lower his head into a DB.
He hurdles people every game.
Yeah. He hurdled someone literally the second before they spotted that ball. That was his last play, was him hurdling and trying to dive for the first down. Why not get him in a situation like that instead of doing exactly what the defense expects and wants you to do, which is just try to run the QB sneak? It's my thought. Because if you roll him out, you also there's a chance you score and you win the game anyway. I mean, you're at the 3-yard line.
The facts of fake news, he should have gone for it. Absolutely, you go for it, because you've got that dude at quarterback and you've got that dude at receiver. Stephon Diggs is amazing.
I like going for it as well. I'm not too mad at the QB sneak call, because it is Josh Allen and he's just one of the best quarterback rushers of today's age. He slipped on the play. If he keeps his footing, I think he gets the first down. The Bills know what their best play on fourth and inches is, and that was it at the time. So I like the play call. It was just unfortunate that he ended up slipping and falling.
He slipped, and the freak show defensive tackle that Tennessee has, Jeffrey Simmons, just blew up. I forget who their left tackle is in Buffalo. Just absolutely put him on his ass. And it would have been close, but that was just a worst case scenario if you're a Bills fan right there.
All right, and Jay kind of prefaced this a little bit, but facts or fake news at number five, Patrick Mahomes is no longer the best quarterback in football.
Facts. He's getting exposed for the people around him not stepping up like they normally have.
Taft?
I mean, Jay, your argument makes me say fake news, because it's not his fault that he's not the best quarterback. It's his receiver's fault for not being able to catch the ball. I think Patrick Mahomes is definitely the most talented quarterback right now. I mean, just the plays that he makes are unreal, and they're plays that no one else in the NFL can make. However, I do think Josh Allen is your guy right now. I think it's fair to say that he's the best quarterback, just the way that he's performed and the numbers that he's put up. So yeah, I'll go facts. I think Patrick Mahomes is second to Josh Allen.
See, two words. Kyler Murray. No, I'm kidding. I'm not gonna make that case right now.
We had this talk late last winter, I think is what it was. And I was saying that he wasn't the best back then. I was on the Josh Allen train back then. Patrick Mahomes, okay, let's be real. Travis Kelce is the best tight end in football, and I don't think it's particularly close. Tyreek Hill is the most uncoverable receiver in the league simply because of his speed. Like, if you want one guy to go catch a football, he and Davante Adams are there, and I take Tyreek Hill because nobody in the United States can run with him. That's not on the Olympic track team. They've got, in my mind, the best offensive play caller who gets a little overzealous, I'm starting to realize, with Andy Reid. Like, it's fun to be creative, but at some point you just got to stick to, like, I'm a traditionalist. I'm sorry if any modernist football people are trying to argue against us. There's certainly that argument. But I think they sometimes try and do too much.
He gets too cute.
Yes.
Now that he's won the Super Bowl, he kind of just wants to, like, you know, flaunt a little bit too much.
They have an offensive coordinator who everybody believes for the last 3 years should have been a head coach somewhere. And I think we'll get either a college job, which I would love to see Eric Bieniemy have a college job, which I've heard that, and it would be beautiful because he would dominate, or some NFL job. And so he's got all this around him, and they're what, 3-3?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
Eric Bieniemy to Gainesville? Can we? Oh my gosh, him and Anthony Richardson in the same offense?
Bro, you would lose it. John would go build a tent in the swamp and go live in the swamp to make sure he soaked up every minute of what was
Nirvana going on right there. Except, you know, they'd probably still retain Grantham, so we'd lose every game 56.
I think he would much rather go to a Big 12 school and play those defenses instead of that being in the SEC.
He should actually, maybe he could go to USC. That'd be fascinating. I don't think that'll actually happen. But, I got some facts here that it's probably Josh Allen. I think it's interesting because we're going to get to the playoffs and a lot of these guys will probably be exposed. But Kyler Murray and Dak are playing really, really well right now. Their numbers are unbelievable. Both are completing north of 73% of their passes right now. Kyler's at 73.8, Dak's at 73.1. Kyler's touchdown to INT is 14-4. Dak is 16-4. I mean,
their teams are a combined 11-1.
That's yeah.
Dak set the record last week for passing yards against the Belichick team.
Yeah. I mean, they are playing out of their minds right now. Both MVP candidates, I think, but before we can pass the baton, Josh Allen played Mahomes last year, lost, played him this year, beat. I think that it's a lot like the NBA when we say who's the best player in the NBA. You got to win head-to-head. Like, you got to go head-to-head with them and take them on and beat them. And until the Cowboys or Cardinals get that chance against Allen and Mahomes, which is obviously unlikely given the NFC nature, I think it's got to be one of those two guys, and I think it's Allen right now. Especially after what they did on Sunday night following a very lengthy rain delay or lightning delay in Kansas City. All right, any final words, boys?
Good pod.
I'm just mentally preparing myself for Carolina to actually not make a bowl game because we need to win two more games and four of our last five opponents are currently ranked.
You know, I couldn't relate being at 5-2 with actually we have no cupcakes left. We could probably finish 5-7. That'd be really bad. That'd be awful.
7-0. I'm only hyped up.
At the very least, Taft, we got the Duke's Mayo Bowl on lock if you go 7-5 in the absolute worst case scenario.
There we go. We already got that one. I'm as pumped up as ever for Georgia, Florida next weekend after hearing you rant.
Well, I think it's really, well, first of all, I'm not going to watch that. I probably will, but I don't want to watch that game. The other interesting thing I'll throw out there is
that massacre preludes how badly we're going to get just obliterated in South Bend at 7:30 on NBC. So we may be just turning off the TVs all afternoon.
Well, I hope that happens because UVA has a bye the following week and would have 2 weeks to prepare for Notre Dame. So I hope Notre Dame runs all over you, and then we'd have that would be our top 25 win. We beat Notre Dame at home, which is going to happen. I mean, I'm manifesting it. Brennan Armstrong, 350, three touchdowns against Notre Dame's defense, but Davis Sherwood protects the punter very, very well. our good buddy from Greensboro, North Carolina, on Notre Dame's football team. I was going to add one thing. Oh, I think it's just interesting.
On Notre Dame's football team either.
Interesting note as we head toward the end of the regular season for bowl games. When I was a senior in high school, I got to see Florida and Virginia play in a New Year's Six Bowl, and it's very possible this year I road trip to Charlotte, North Carolina to watch Florida and UVA play in the Duke's Mayo Bowl.
That's so bad.
Well, it's funny because of the one program that'll be there, UVA will be happy to make a bowl game after we thought we had no more talent on offense, and Florida just would rather be anywhere else. Probably, honestly, rather just not be bowl eligible. So,
do you think that the entire Florida team would show up to that bowl game?
No, they're never going to show up because they don't care about playing for Dan Mullen because he sucks. That is all for episode 41 of Stonewall Sports Talk. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy the games this weekend and keep your eyes out because Penn State and Pitt might just make the playoff. Take care.